Morning, everyone. We'll call the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee meeting to order. Representative Albright, could I have a motion on the minutes, please, from April 7th?
I would make a motion that we adopt the minutes as amended by the Chief Clerk.
Representative Albright moves the minutes from April 7th. Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted.
Hey, stop it.
With that, members, we are here today to talk about recommendations for the Campaign Finance Board. With that, we will start with our first individual, which will be Margaret Lepick. And as she is on her way up to the front, I will go ahead and make a motion and move that the appointment of Margaret Lepick be recommended to be confirmed. So with that, Ms. Lepick, you are in front of the committee. Welcome to the committee. If you would, please introduce yourself for the record, and then why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want the job.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll say most people know me by Peggy Lepick, and that's fine with me if you want to call me Peggy. But I am formerly Margaret Lepick, and I appreciate very much this opportunity to talk to you and answer your questions today. I worked full-time as a research assistant in biochemistry and until my children came along, and then I became a very active volunteer and have continued to do that ever since. I found that it's a great way to help people and to be involved and make friends all at the same time, and it's how I give back to this community, which has been so good to me and to my family. It's also what eventually led me to run for a House seat in 1990, and I served there for 12 years. I should say here for 12 years. Shortly after I retired in January 2003, Governor Pawlenty appointed me to the Met Council, where I served for 8 years, the last three as Vice Chair. Since leaving the Met Council, I have remained interested in public affairs, although I have not been particularly active in the political arena. I have served on the Campaign Finance Board now since my appointment last May, and I would like to continue because I really believe very strongly in the work that it does. The agency's charged to oversee and publish information about the money raised and spent to influence state elections is vital to the integrity of our elections and the public's trust in the decisions that are made in state government. I have a few thoughts on the board itself that I would like to share with you. Most important is the absolute necessity of fairness and consistency, regardless of political affiliations, when dealing with individual cases. I also believe that it's important to have representation on the board by people who have actually run for state office and know what it's like to be directly affected by the campaign finance laws, which, as you probably know, can be complicated and not always crystal clear. The board expects a great deal, both from candidates and from their treasurers, who are usually volunteers. And so I believe it has a responsibility to provide them with good training and to be readily available to help them when they ask for it. Based on what I've experienced myself, the board, I believe, does a very good job. But there is always room for improvement, and the website is one example where improvement has been needed, and in fact, it is undergoing a major revision right now, and I believe it will be ready to roll in June. I hope that during my brief time on the board that I've made a positive contribution and that I've lived up to my own expectations of bringing a nonpartisan and open mind to each case that comes before the board. It is really been a privilege to serve on the board, and I would be honored with your consent to continue to serve a full term. And with that, Mr. Chair, I am happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lubick, for your opening. Why don't you tell us a little bit more, maybe take a deeper dive into what you think the mission of the Campaign Finance Board or the objective of the Campaign Finance Board is, from your opinion, and what you think your objective would be as a member of the Campaign Finance Board.
Okay. Well, I will tell you first, my objective is to carry out the charge that the legislature has given to the Campaign Finance Board when it created it, and that is to oversee and publish information about the money that is raised and spent to influence state elections. And I do believe that that is really critical, because without that kind of information, it leaves a major gap or hole that the public has a very difficult time accessing. It's very difficult to find that information without having an agency that is actually collecting it and making it accessible to the public. I'm not sure what more I can say. I just feel very strongly that the public and the credibility of not just legislators, but judicial positions that come under this, and all of the constitutional offices that are affected by this, the credibility of those positions, the people who hold it, is on the line without having some kind of oversight over the kinds of money that are raised, where it's coming from, and how it's being spent. Money talks.
Why don't you talk a little bit more about that, if you would? What do you think your solution would be? I mean, there's been a lot of discussion to campaign finance issues. So at the state level, what are your solutions? What are your thoughts on the money that talks?
Well, clearly disclosure is important. Can be a pretty controversial issue. Disclosure is a policy issue, and its parameters are set by the legislature. The Campaign Finance Board administers those. It also is an enforcement body in the sense that it tracks a great deal of information that comes to it through the reports that are required of candidates and lobbyists and others. And if it finds violations, it pursues those. Most violations are relatively minor, and they are unintentional and are handled quite easily, I guess, and agreeably, I think you could say. Occasionally, there are some that are more serious or that are not simple. And in that case, the board has the option of going and doing a little deeper dive into what's going on. And with the hammer, I guess you could say, of being able to apply fines and civil penalties. Although I think it does this very well, because in the case of civil penalties, particularly, they can sometimes be fairly large. They can accumulate. And the board's approach has been to say, okay, we will take a percentage of the total fine and apply that now. And I can't remember whether it's 20 or 25%, but it's a small percentage. And we will hold the rest in advance until a particular period of time. And if no further infractions occur, that is waived. And I think that is a fair way of doing it. It gives teeth. Laws have to be have to have teeth. They have to be enforceable, and they have to be enforced to be effective. And I think that's why the legislature gave the Campaign Finance Board the ability to enforce violations of the campaign finance laws.
Ms. Lubick, when it comes to those policy discussions with the legislature, what do you view the Campaign Finance Board, what's their role in policy discussions, and how will you advocate the board interact with the legislature?
Well, of course, obviously, the Campaign Finance Board is very close to the laws. They understand the laws. I won't say that each of us on the board understands the laws completely, but we have a really excellent staff, and I think we on the board are in various stages of our sophistication. I'm quite new, and so I'm learning a great deal. The policies are set by the legislature. The Campaign Finance Board's role is to carry those out, to administer the policies. But I also think, because of its particular insight and the understanding of the impact of many of these laws and rules, and because the courts are constantly making decisions regarding finances, campaign finances, and so on, changes need sometimes to be looked at, considered. And I think, in my mind, the best way to approach this is for the board to see where it feels that changes could be effectively made to improve our system, but not come forward necessarily with a bill, but rather to come forward with recommendations, ideas, suggestions, and options, and talk to legislators about those ideas that they have and see what might be able to fly. And it is not, in my mind, the role of the board to make policy, but it is, I think, a reasonable role of the board to make some policy recommendations and leave it to the legislature to follow up on that as they will.
Thank you, Ms. Lubick. Other member questions? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the context of how far would you believe the Campaign Finance Board should go to enforce infractions of the rules?
Ms. Lubick.
We have a process that involves several steps. And the initial step is a review by the board chair and the executive director. And if the board chair decides that there's prima facie evidence to proceed or that there is reason for a violation, he can sign off on that. And I believe that I may be getting this a little bit scrambled because I haven't actually gone through that myself, but it can move forward from that point, or it can stop at that point. The board itself can take up a violation, a potential violation, and approve moving forward with it through an investigation or simple application of a fine. I hope I'm not I hope I'm not making any mistakes here in the process, but if the violation appears to be more major, shall we say, and not one that can be easily resolved with agreement on both sides, it can proceed to an investigation by staff. It can be an informal investigation. It can be a formal investigation. and then come back to the board for action. If a violation seems really serious or complicated, it can be referred to the Attorney General's office.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that. And just I wanted to just expand on that in terms of if you, let's just for the sake of argument find that the CFB found an egregious assault on the rules to the extent that the election itself was called into question. What would be the directive that you would have in your purview, or what steps following on would you take to see subsequent that even the election itself might be nullified?
Ms. Lepik?
Mr. Chair, Member Albright, you know, I am not sure. I have not seen that happen. I have not heard it discussed. And my assumption would be that it would probably be referred to the Attorney General's office, but honestly, I don't know. But we do have staff here who is much more knowledgeable on the laws, and I'd be happy to have one of them, Jeff Sigurdsson or our Chair Gary Goldsmith, come up and answer your question if you'd like. Well,
I think we're vetting you as a candidate versus that. Verifying what the CFB would do. So it really goes to the point in terms of your personal belief or policy directives as opposed to the board itself. So if I can redirect the question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
There was an instance here a few years ago where it was found out that a substantial amount of money was poured into several campaigns on behalf of the candidates. And after the fact, it was found that that was done inappropriately. And it swung one of the chambers in the state of Minnesota to a different majority. Do you believe, in your estimation personally, that that situation should have been researched and or drawn to the attention of the AG's office or to the Secretary of State's office?
Ms. Lepik?
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I don't know how they did it, but it would, I mean, I don't know how they found out the information about this money pouring in that created the violation. If it was the Campaign Finance Board that discovered it, then they at some point would have had to have referred it on, and they are not, I think, in a position to make that kind of a decision. They can gather the facts, but I would assume that that would be either taken up by the Attorney General's office, or that it would be taken directly to the courts by by the losing side, I guess, or the somebody representing them, a party or an individual.
Final follow-up, Representative Albright.
But I think to try to answer your question, I don't see the Campaign Finance Board doing that, making that decision. They can put forward the findings that they've made, but I think in a situation like that, it probably has to wind up in a court or in another place.
Final follow-up, Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, so would you agree with the statement that the CFB is really contextually only responsible for calling balls and strikes?
Ms. Lepik.
I'm not quite sure how to answer that, because the kinds of violations, for the most part, that we deal with are ones that are pretty straightforward. And involve civil penalties. They don't involve the loss of a job or an office. But to be honest with you, this is the first time I've been asked that question or even thought about that situation. And I would want to give it a lot more careful thought than to throw something out here without really understanding what the possible routes to take are.
Representative Ballbright, you need to clarify that.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, and for the sake of this committee's responsibility to vet candidates, I think the question goes to the point of the import of the positions, as well as making sure that the candidates themselves have thought through some of these positions, whether they be new to the board or longstanding. I think it's important to be mindful of what the job description as well as the mandate for the CFB is. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Lepik, thanks for your service to the state of Minnesota. I don't know what the protocol is for former members, what we address them as. Is it Ms. or is there a honorable? I don't know. But welcome back to the House. Thank you, Representative. I'm being advised by counsel here. One of the things that you mentioned in your testimony was the credibility of the board and the importance of the credibility of the board in the way that they serve the public. Do you have a sense in the time that you've been serving on the board of how that plays out in day-to-day operations of the board, and how have you heard how the board is perceived by the public? Is credibility is the credibility that the board strives for being received, I guess, by the public?
Ms. Lepik?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Halverson, I honestly don't think most of the public is even aware that he exists, to start with. Anybody who's run for office, the state office, or tried to get a ballot question passed or defeated certainly knows of its existence. And I think that's unfortunate, because the board really does provide a lot of information to the public. And in that sense, I think one of the roles of the board is to try to educate the public that this information is there for them. And it's good information that they can use as they participate in an election cycle, that they can get information that is actually useful. I'm sorry now, what was the rest of your question?
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the how you see the aim of credibility of the board, your stated aim of credibility of the board, how do you see that playing out in your work on the board?
I actually thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Halverson. I think those who deal with the board, by and large, believe it does do a good job. I have found them to be very accessible. And many people that I have talked to have including legislators, have also found them to be very accessible and very helpful. They just have to pick up the phone. And with the new website and online training that's going to be available to them, it's really, they're doing a good job. It takes a while. They've got a small, very dedicated, excellent staff, but there's only so much you can do at a time. And I do think that it does help in credibility. I think that people do believe that if they call the campaign finance board for information, the information they get is going to be good. It's going to be truthful. They will get help if they need it. And that's really what we want to be able to provide.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I think there are a few organizations in state government that are serving the public best when the public knows the least about them. If the Campaign Finance Board was in the news a lot and candidates were in the news a lot, it would mean that we were not running our campaigns the way we should. I feel the same way about the Department of Public Health, the Public Health Lab, that it's best if we don't know they're there, otherwise there's an outbreak happening. So, that being said, I know that the qualifications to serve on the board, that state law does have some very specific measures about who's going to serve, and that there are some two spots that are partisan, two spots that are former legislative members that from different political parties, and spots for members who have not had political activity in the past few years. Which seat are you being have you been appointed to, and are we reviewing today?
Ms. Lepik?
Excuse me. I am currently filling the seat that was vacated by Representative Neil Peterson. It is a partisan position for a former Republican legislator.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had just said something earlier around money talks, and we all know the influence of money. So tell us what you think about the value of the public subsidy that taxpayers support by checking off the box on their taxes, saying that they would want money going to that fund, the value in our elections, and even in creating rules that can be enforced as a condition of receiving the public subsidy. Talk to us a little about that.
Ms. Lepik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lane. Well, I was a beneficiary of the public subsidy way back when. And I always thought it was a pretty good idea. I liked it. It made it possible for people to support a party or a candidate that they really wanted to support but had a very little amount of money. And I think when people actually put money towards something, elections, they feel, even if it's a very small amount, they feel that they got skin in the game, and they become engaged. And maybe they don't go out and bang up lawn signs, but they tend to follow more carefully. And what I like to see is an engaged public. I think it helps. So I'm always happy when it's there.
Thank you.
Representative Lane, you want to get to, okay. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Former Representative Lepik, can you tell me how many applicants you were up against for this position?
Ms. Lepik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm sorry, I can't see your name.
Oh, Representative Fenton.
Fenton. Thank you. I don't have opposition. Thank you.
Representative Fenton.
Mr. Chair, what about in 2015 when you were very first appointed?
Ms. Lepik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know who nominated me. All I know is that I got a call from the executive director, Gary Goldsmith, saying, would you like to serve on the campaign finance board? The governor would like to nominate you.
Representative Fenton.
No further questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other member questions or discussion? Representative Rumbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say, having served at the same time as Ms. Lepik, I don't know if we were ever in the House together.
Yes, we were.
But anyway, a very thoughtful, very hardworking legislator, and I certainly would support her being reappointed to the
Thank
board.
You, Representative Rumbach. Any other member questions or discussion? Any final words, Ms. Lepik?
No, I'm thank you for this time and appreciate your support. Thank you, Representative Rumbach.
Thank you. With that, members, I'll renew my motion That the appointment of Ms. Peggy Lepick be recommended to be confirmed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Lepick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next on the agenda, we have Ms. Emma Greenman, and as she's making her way to the table, I will make a motion that the appointment of Emma Greenman be recommended to be confirmed. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And why don't you just, once you get yourself collected up there, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background and why you want the job?
Thank you, and I apologize. I have a little bit of a cough today, so I brought up my water. Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
That's okay. We're not the Senate. You can drink here.
Or court. Thank you. My name is Emma Greenman, and I was appointed by Governor Dayton to fill an open seat to be held by a Democrat on the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. It's an honor to be here to be considered for confirmation by this committee. You have a packet of information about me, so I'll try to give you a brief overview of my background and more importantly, why I'm interested in serving on the board. I'm a Minnesotan. I was born and bred. I grew up in Minneapolis, and I'm now living in South Minneapolis. I attended college at George Washington University and attended law school at Berkeley and graduate school at Harvard. I returned to Minnesota in 2009 and took the bar and started my legal career as a public defender at the Ramsey County Public Defender's Office. Until the end of last year, I was a lawyer in private practice at Maslin LLP, where I practiced commercial and insurance litigation, and I'm now the National Voting Rights Director doing nonpartisan voting and election administration work at a national nonprofit. This board service comes at a good time for me, as I'm not working on campaign finance litigation or any other issues, and none of my work is focused in Minnesota. My interest in serving on the board comes from my belief in its important role that it plays in protecting the integrity of our elections by fairly and impartially administering Minnesota's campaign finance laws. I, like many current and former board members from both political parties, have been politically active in my past. This background has given me tremendous respect for the role the board plays in helping candidates and committees fulfill their obligations under the law and, when necessary, enforce the law in a fair, impartial, and even-handed manner. This experience also reinforced the necessity of the board's fair and consistent enforcement of the laws without regard to partisanship. And having had the pleasure of serving on the board since January, it's been my experience that each of us serving on this bipartisan board takes very seriously our role in coming in and leaving that partisanship by the wayside and applying the law impartially and consistently to each specific case. We must, and we do, set aside partisanship and our political backgrounds, because the board only functions if we apply the law fairly, consistently, and even-handedly, and that's the perception of the public and the folks interacting with the board. My time on the board has also reinforced the importance of its role in providing service and support to campaigns, candidates, volunteer treasurers, and others in the process. One of the great strengths of Minnesota's democracy is its citizen legislature, which makes it doubly important that the board understand how candidates, volunteer treasurers, campaign committees, and others are involved and that the board and staff work to provide trainings and support that folks need to comply with the law. From serving on the board and from visits with many of you, I think one of the most important things and challenges the board faces is modernizing its systems and assistance to provide efficient and accessible support to campaigns, to committees, to volunteer treasurers, and others. This includes making the website user-friendly and intuitive, something already in the works where there's work to go. It also includes continuing to get the feedback and ideas from you, from campaigns, from committees, and others on the way that we can make compliance and reporting more efficient, more convenient, and provide support and training for folks across the state. I've really enjoyed my brief service on the board, and I believe it's a valuable way that I can serve the board, the people of Minnesota, and I want to thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Greenman, for your introduction. What if you would just start, if you would, talk about your opinion of the mission of the Campaign Finance Board.
The mission of the Campaign Finance Board, as I see it, is to execute and enforce the laws, our Minnesota's campaign finance laws. I think it functions as an administrative and in the enforcement capacity, a quasi-judicial role. And as a board member, I see my role a lot like I saw sort of from my legal background, is to come to look at the law and look at the facts in front of us on the specific circumstances and apply the law as it's written.
So beyond the mission of the Campaign Finance Board, can you talk a little bit about the actual function? I know you kind of just hit on a little bit, but can you just do a little deeper dive and what do you see the function of the Campaign Finance Board?
I think that the main role of the Campaign Finance Board is to help and ensure that the campaign finance laws that the legislature wrote are complied with. And that requires the administrative functions that the board does in terms of being responsive to all the folks who are reporting and complying with the laws. And it also involves the enforcement function, which is a quasi-judicial function, looking at when violations are brought to the board, looking at those violations, looking at the law and deliberating, the six-person board deliberating and making a determination. So I'd say that's my sense of the work of the board.
With that being your sense of the work of the board, what's your philosophy? What are you going to bring as a member to the board? What philosophical views are you bringing to the Campaign Finance Board?
I believe very strongly that the way that the legislature has set up the campaign finance rules is one of the reasons that we continue to have a citizen legislature where candidates and campaigns can be volunteer driven, where folks can run for office. And I believe that in Minnesota, Minnesotans believe in the integrity of the system in large part because folks comply with the law and the board is there to make sure in an impartial way that folks comply with the law. And that's what I bring. I think it's very important that the board remained accessible to candidates, campaign committees, and folks. And I think having a background and seeing that, I think that the majority of folks, I'd say the vast majority of folks, are looking to comply and run their campaigns in the way that they can talk to voters. And I think that the board's role is to make sure that folks comply with that law and are able to do that.
Thank you, Ms. Greenman. Now, you've also written pretty extensively and talked pretty publicly about your opinion on campaign finance disclosure law, which is absolutely perfectly okay for you to do and your right to do. But you're applying for a very important board where the public needs to have a lot of assurance and faith in the board. How are you going to remain impartial and objective as a member of the board in spite of the very specific stances you've taken on some of your writings?
Well, let me start by saying that I think most of my writings has been jurisprudential and legal. And from that background, what I see my role on the board is enforcing and executing the law, the policymaking position, the policymaking authority comes with the legislature. That's also what I've written. So my take and what I've written specifically having to do with campaign finance is I think that the legislature, and in my case most of it's been on federal issues, and so Congress is in the best position to understand what the issue of campaign finance and disclosure is, and also to figure out rules that are consistent and fair that address that.
So do you believe that federal campaign finance laws and rules affect state campaign finance laws and rules?
I believe that the federal jurisprudence that I wrote about in terms of Citizens United and McCutcheon is the law of the land, and so governs both state and federal.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe some of your ideal solutions, and how would you act as a member of the Campaign Finance Board in looking at maybe some solutions to the campaign finance issues?
So I actually haven't done a lot of policy design and issues, deep dives into disclosure, which I know has been in front of the committee. I think that my general philosophy is that rules like that need to be fairly and consistently applied and easy to comply with. But I again think that the legislature and Congress, but in this case the legislature, is in the best position to dig into those details, which oftentimes require looking at a lot of different pieces of information and coming to some conclusions. And I'd say, I think, in terms of the board, I think the board's main role is administrative and as an enforcement body, and so it requires four votes for anything to move forward, which means that it requires bipartisan, by de facto bipartisan support to move anything forward, which means the board is cautious, and I think it should be cautious, particularly in the realm of policymaking.
You've written that big money could be the death of our democracy. Could you expand a little bit on that?
Are those my direct words?
They are, actually.
Good at that hyperbole.
I'm just curious, yep. If you could maybe define what that means, what that looks like, and how does that impact you on the campaign finance board as a member?
So I'll start by saying, again, sort of reiterating that I don't think that that going into the campaign finance board, I think my role is to look at the law that the legislature has written, apply in the enforcement context, apply the facts fairly and impartially, and in the administrative context, figure out how to administer the rules in such a way that comply with the law. My personal belief is that, and where a lot of my writing and jurisprudence comes from, is I think the most important relationship, the most important thing in our democracy is that candidates can speak and communicate with their voters and potential voters, and that's sort of everything else is based on that. And the fear that I wrote about in terms of big money is that when candidates and frankly political parties are drowned out in their own races, I think that it's disruptive to the role that candidates and voters and the potential voters who are going to vote for them, to that important relationship in our democracy. That's, again, my personal, that's where a lot of my personal philosophy comes from. But again, I come to this as a lawyer, understanding that the rules were written by the legislature. To the extent that the legislature thinks that we should change those rules, that's up to this committee and to the Senate and to the governor. But I see my role on the board as in the quasi-judicial and administrative role.
Thank you, Ms. Greenman. What do you believe the role of the campaign finance board is in interacting with the legislature in policy discussions? How will you, as a member of the campaign finance board, interact with the legislature? What sort of policy initiatives would you put forward? And then again, as the board as a whole in general, what does that picture look like for you?
So I think that the first off, sort of to move forward on any policy, it requires four votes of the board. I think that many of us would like to make sure that there's consensus there in terms of six, but it requires bipartisan moving forward. I think we need to be cautious. I think, as was raised in Ms. Lepick's hearing, the integrity of the board and people's view of the board is really important. I think the board can be a resource and should be a resource, and I think legislators should see the board as a resource in both the technical and other issues. But again, I think being conservative and cautious, because our primary role is enforcement and administrative, and that the whole structure of the campaign finance rules are set up to make sure that the board and require the board to do that and do that well.
And how do you think the board should interact on policy discussions?
I think that the board can be a resource. I think we should be conservative and cautious before getting into a policy discussion. I again think that the legislature is the policymaking body, and I'd say from my personal belief and what I've written, the legislature is also the body that is closest to some of these issues. And so in terms of finding both problems and solutions, it's the legislative body, both in Congress and in Minnesota, that is actually closest to these particular campaign finance issues, and structurally it's also the policymaking body. So I think that we should follow that lead.
Thank you, Ms. Greenman. We'll move on to other member questions. Representative O'Driscoll, then Representative Fenton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Greenman, welcome to the committee, and
thank you
for joining us today. A couple of thoughts that I want to just probe into a little bit more. Oftentimes this committee hears the question of big money, and it's something that was brought up, and I'd like to just ask a little bit more about that. Can you define, in your experiences, your background, your involvement, what is big money?
Ms. Greenman.
Thank you. I think it's a hyperbolic phrase, so I can't define it, and I think any sort of any statutory structure that deals with it should define that through the legislative process. I think, as I said, I think in my personal belief, and again, I don't think that the role of my role on the board is to legislate that or to sort of participate in that policymaking. But in my personal belief, I think that organized money that's outside of the control of candidates and folks, that's where it becomes a problem. I think, again, candidates need to be able to speak to and have the resources to speak to their constituents. And my worry is when there's vast amounts of organized money from outside, usually the state or the district, that gets in the way of that. But again, I think that the definition of big money is something that would be needed, that would need to be defined in statute by the legislature.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, in some of your writings, you've referred to the term big money. That's why I'm asking you to help us to get an idea of, one, will we know big money when we see it from your perspective as somebody who's going to be involved in making policy recommendations. Can you maybe share with us what your thoughts were on big money at the time that you were writing? Do you have any examples of what that might be?
No, and I would
Ms.
actually...
Freeman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd actually say that was more of an analysis of the Supreme Court's decision. I haven't been involved in Minnesota or nationally on sort of making campaign finance policy in Congress. So I would say again that I think that question is an important one for the legislature, and the Campaign Finance Board is in its administrative and its executive. Executing the laws as they exist is not in the position to answer that.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I still am now more confused, I think, about what the definition of big money is. And from your perspective, certainly you had recognized something that you had some concerns about. So maybe I'll just try it this way. I'll throw some examples out, and you tell me yes or no. Money that, before I do that, this committee receives policy recommendations about disclosure and about different kinds of things, and sometimes that word big money or outside sources and things are used. Would the Supreme Court decision for Citizens United and those efforts that are permitted by the actions of the Supreme Court be considered big money in your estimation?
Ms. Greenman.
I'm not 100% sure I understand the question. Citizens United is the law of the land, and so to the extent that it allows those expenditures, that's the law of the land, and I don't really have much to say on that.
Representative Bodrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The law of the land, I understand that, but some will in this committee have testified and members have raised the question that because of Citizens United, that is considered to be big money. And then conversely, the question is asked, if that's big money, where people are, to paraphrase your testimony earlier today, that it's where organizations or people are organized to influence campaigns, would the efforts of labor unions or other kinds of groups be considered big money in that definition of trying to influence the outcome? I'm just trying to get an idea of what your thoughts are, because you've clearly written about it, so you have some opinions on it. I'm just trying to get, because that will be something you will, I'll guarantee, be asked to weigh in on if past practices are any indication of future outcomes for this committee and for this legislature.
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, I think that, again, I'm talking about organized money, from my personal opinion, organized money on labor or corporate or anything else is the same. And my concern personally, and what I've written about personally, arises when it gets in the way of candidates being able to control their own campaigns. And so, yes, I think that there's I think that both in terms of the problem and the solutions that the legislature, that the legislative body, both nationally and state, consistency and clarity and uniformity is important when we talk about big money. I don't think that it depends. I don't think it matters who. It just, from my perspective, I think candidates. I come from a place where I think candidates need to have the capacity to communicate with their voters, and I get concerned when there's interference with that. But I will again say that I view my role on the board as an administrative and executive. If I wanted to make policy, I'd probably run for the legislature. So I take seriously the role that I've articulated of our board.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of other follow-up questions on this. Since we can't define what big money is, you know, put a definition on that, can we define what big money is with a dollar amount?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I think that the legislature could. I think that there's a lot of choices involved in that. I don't think that that's my role either on the board or my background. I think that it's something for the legislature as the policymaking body to define.
Mr. Chair, just one follow-up question, if I might. I was mentioning the organized labor's participation and the activities that are allowed under the Supreme Court ruling with Citizens United. We sometimes also hear a question about should corporations be able to contribute money to causes and things as it relates to the employee groups that might be organized in those companies versus the companies and the shareholders themselves. Do you have any thoughts, comments, or reactions to how that would need to be addressed or by the Campaign Finance Board?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, currently the law is we implement the law as it's written, and to the extent that the legislature wants to change the law to address those issues, I think that the legislature is in your policymaking purview. I will say that I think that, you know, clarity and consistency and uniformity is always good when it comes to the law. It's good for the board because then we can have clear lines. But again, I'd say that I think that the question you're asking is really a policymaking question that I don't see my role on the board or the board's role as leading on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Greenman, in your opening statement, you mentioned that you want to serve on the Campaign Finance Board, one reason maintaining the integrity of elections. Can you expand on where maintaining the integrity of elections is in the purview of the Campaign Finance Board? Because our elections are administered by the Secretary of State and not the Campaign Finance Board.
Ms. Greenman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fenton. I think that that was a broad statement. I think that the public has a lot of faith in the way that candidates and campaigns run their campaigns, and part of that is the way that candidates spend money is the public financing system, and I think that is all a part of the integrity of our elections, and I'm well aware that where the campaign finance jurisdiction ends. I think what I meant by that is that I think being fair and transparent and helping candidates and committees comply with the law is something that's very important to Minnesota, and is one of the reasons that I think people have such, people have such high regard for the way that elections are run in Minnesota.
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Greenman. And could you tell me how many applicants you were up against before being appointed?
Ms. Greenman?
I can't. I don't have that information. I submitted an application to the governor's office. You'd have to ask the governor's office. I wasn't informed of that.
Representative Fenton?
Would Mr. Goldsmith know the answer to that? Mr. Chair?
He's shaking his head yes. So. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Goldsmith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Gary Goldsmith. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. I did have a chance to review the applications that were submitted for this position. I think there were at least four, perhaps five. Of those, I believe at least two were people who are sort of perennial appliers for almost every position that opens, and at least one other was a viable applicant, so there were at least two viable applicants.
Thank you, Mr. Goldsmith. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Chairman Sanders. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Representative Fenton. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Greenman, Goldsmith, sorry, I was getting my names mixed up. You had mentioned in your opening statement about applying the law impartially and in a way that supports a volunteer and citizen-driven campaign in Minnesota. And how do you see the campaign finance board's work supporting a volunteer-driven, citizen-driven campaign? I guess my question is, what's the role of the board in balancing punitive action with helping these folks who are volunteers and working to educate on actual compliance so that our election system maintains its integrity?
Ms. Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson. I think that the more that the board can do and the more emphasis we can place on helping, training, supporting, I think the board, I can only speak for myself, but having been on the board, I think we all take the view that compliance, helping folks comply, is the best way to uphold and uphold the integrity of the statute. And so that looks like making sure that there's that the staff is accessible, that we modernize and make information and trainings more accessible. Volunteer treasurers turn over all the time. It's a tough job. And I think that the board's role needs to take seriously that we can help them. The legislature wrote the reporting and compliance rules. The board needs to help make sure that they have the accessible training, support, software, all of those pieces. I think that the more that we can help do that, the less the hope is that the less we can have to enforce, because we've helped folks comply with the law. So I think that there is that balance. It is in the enforcement, it is a quasi-judicial role, and so we require the board to look at the law and look at the facts in front of us and take four votes to move forward on anything. But I think the balance really is, and why I spoke about needing to modernize and really make sure that the staff is supportive, is to support the infrastructure, candidates, the volunteer treasurers, and everyone, so that folks know the rules and know how they can do it and can do that in a way that makes sense.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as a follow-up, how would you say that your professional experience supports that goal of supporting the impartial application of the campaign finance laws and supports making sure campaigns have what they need to comply?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, as an attorney, there's attorneys on the board and there's legislators on the board, and I think as an attorney, one of the advantages is I'm used to sort of going into a situation, leaving aside your personal political views, looking at the law and looking at the facts and the circumstances in front of the case as it relates to enforcement. I'd say the pleasure of the board, having now been to a couple of meetings, is I think all six of us come to that, and we deliberate and we discuss. But that is a role that I think as an attorney, that has been helpful practice and is a helpful background. And then I would say I think it is nice, and as Ms. Lepik said about being a representative, I think it's helpful to have folks who've come, who've seen how this plays out on the ground, so they know what the hard work that candidates and volunteer treasurers and everyone else are doing to comply with the law, and that is helpful background as we look at administrative pieces and how to make things fairer and more efficient and easily accessible.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just finally, I had mentioned earlier that the law seeks to find balance on our campaign finance board and has designated roles for people who have partisan backgrounds and people who have nonpartisan backgrounds and people who have elected backgrounds. Can you enlighten us onto which seat you're looking to fill?
Ms. Greenman.
I was appointed to a seat that has no that requires partisan balance, so I'm the Democrat being appointed to a seat that has no restrictions on prior partisan activity.
Representative Howers.
Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I kind of wonder, seeing your bio and all the activity, political activity, will it be hard to take off your political partisan hat as you review, I guess, cases and get information about candidates?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck. No, I think that many members of the board come from a background where they've been active in politics. I have, and I think that I understand the important role and the integrity of the even-handedness of the board. Having worked with candidates who potentially could have been in front of the board, I think we took very seriously that the board was going to treat us in an even-handed and impartial manner. And as a lawyer, I took an oath to be an officer of the court and to uphold the law. And I think that the role of the campaign finance board and each of the members are to look at the law that the legislature has written in a fair and impartial manner and apply the facts. And frankly, that the board wouldn't function if folks came at it with their partisan or political background. And that wouldn't be good for candidates, and I don't think it would be good for our democracy.
Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Does each member of the board sign a confidentiality agreement?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, part of the work that the board does is public, and the enforcement work is confidential, and in the statute it's very clearly defines what is confidential, and there's actually fines that attach to us. I think it's a $1,000 fine for violating that confidentiality as it relates to enforcement actions.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Runbeck,
right, you said that attaches to you as board members, is that what you said?
Ms. Greenman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, I believe that's right. In the statute that the legislature has written, there is a confidentiality fine that attaches.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, then as far as publishing, I guess how would you look at speaking publicly, letters to the editor, I don't know, that kind of thing as a board member? Or do you feel you will have to, restrict yourself from that in any way?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, I think that, yes, I am not speaking on campaign finance issues in Minnesota or elsewhere. And the confidentiality provision applies specifically to enforcement actions. But I have not, since I have been on the board, I have not taken positions on campaign finance issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
final follow-up, Representative Runbeck.
And we as members, obviously, we all file these reports. Some of us have received fines, here and there, make a mistake. Another question. Do board members have access to the campaign CFS software?
Ms. Greenman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, the staff is the ones who manage the reporting coming in and out. We only see reports as they are brought to the board. So I have to say I don't think so, but I'd have to ask staff to that question. I certainly have never accessed it.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Brownback.
Just curious because, we input information all the way through the year, so you would know if I've raise money or if I haven't, let's just say, and conveying that information sort of to a buddy or to somebody who could be harmful, just as a thought that crosses my mind. So I just maybe we could get some enlightenment. Maybe Mr. Gehring, do we have a law about
Mr. Goldsmith's
that?
Making his way back up. Welcome back to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Runbeck. The campaign finance software is actually what's called a client-based software application, which means it is installed on your computer and runs there, and all the data you enter stays on your computer. So during the year, we have no access to your data whatsoever. That includes staff and the board. And then periodically, when filings become due, you run a process in your software that extracts from your records that data that's disclosable to the board. You can actually print the report on your end or just look at it, see what we will get, and that's what we get, which is only that data that is disclosable to the public. So there's no chance for a board member or a staff member to understand anything about what's going on with your committee other than through your periodic reports.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goldsmith. Representative Runbeck.
I'm glad I asked.
All right, Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Greenman, for being here today. And I appreciate Representative Howison pointing out, because I was looking at Minnesota Statute 10A.02 Subdivision 1, and we did set up a bipartisan board with six members with partisan balance. But I want to say, Ms. Greenman, that I appreciate you coming forward and saying you understand clearly, given your legal background, that we need to separate, and you will separate, your personal beliefs, which we all have, with your work, your professional work on the board, as being administrative and enforcement. So, but, you know, I have some specific questions for you, as I'm wondering if you have been involved in advocating for campaign finance reform issues here in Minnesota.
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Seltzer, or Representative Seltzer, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Greenman. Were you on the board when the Citizens Financial Board, CFB, took a position on the disclosure legislation?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seltzer, no, I wasn't.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Chair Sanders and Ms. Greenman. Do you work now in your work on the Center for Popular Democracy? Do you work on campaign finance issues?
Ms. Greenman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seltzer, no, I do not.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Do you work on any issues that fall within the jurisdiction of the CFB?
Ms. Greenman?
No.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Greenman. Is your voting work focused here in Minnesota?
Ms. Greenman.
No.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. And Ms. Greenman, do you lobby or advocate for issues or legislation here in Minnesota?
Ms. Greenman.
No, I do not.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. Thank you, Ms. Greenman.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to follow up a little bit on Representative Runbeck's line of questioning. I'm the chair of the Civil Law and Data Practices Commission, so those issues are really important to me. And as a member of the Campaign Finance Board, you will be privy to confidential information during executive sessions and investigations of potential campaign finance violations, et cetera. And you made a remark on a podcast last year on a podcast called Wrong About Everything, dated March 8th, 2015. And on that podcast, you made light of a serious data privacy issue, which I'm not going to repeat. I don't think it's appropriate to say in this committee hearing, but it regarded Hillary Clinton and the reason for setting up her private email server, which we now know was a cause for national security concern. So I just want to ask you to clarify what you meant by that comment, if you remember what that was.
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, I want to clarify that before that was long before that I was appointed to the board. I was appointed to the board in 2016. I'm not exactly sure the comment you're referring to. I think that to the extent that it applies to my role on the board, that confidentiality and the way that the legislature wrote confidentiality into the statute is really important. It's important for the integrity of the enforcement actions. It's important to the integrity of the way that folks who come before the board and the way that the board deliberates. And I think that I take that very seriously.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that you do take it very seriously. because the remark was really off color and made light of, you know, a very serious national security risk. And the comment, I think everybody in this committee would probably agree that it was unbecoming of someone that's running for this spot. I also had a question. In 2006, you were an SEIU project director, and during that time, did you ever direct independent expenditures?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, that was an issue project that I worked on 4 years ago, and no.
Representative Scott.
That's good. Thank you.
Representative Joaquin.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Greenman, for being here. And I have to apologize for Ms. Lepik. This first question I should have asked both of you. I just haven't had enough coffee this morning. Ms. Greenman, I think you've showed very well that you have a grasp on what the duties are of the Campaign Finance Board and how important it is to be able to separate out those duties with what you may have said 10 years ago. And given your background and in the law, I think you'll be a very beneficial member. Could you maybe tell me a little bit about, I know you've only been serving since January, a little bit about the impressions of the work the board and its staff does?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin. So I will say, and sort of to repeat what I said in my opening, I think that we all come from a various professional backgrounds, political backgrounds, and folks have been active, but come to the table. One of the things that I have appreciated and really liked most about it is that the six of us come to the board meetings. We have a packet, hundreds of pages of reading to do, to come prepared. Everybody comes prepared to dig into the law and really have a discussion and for the most part reach consensus. And that process of digging into the law as the legislature wrote it, and also looking at the facts and circumstances in front of us, has been both rewarding, and it has increased my respect and the honor that it is serving on the board.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just have to throw out there, I don't know, I know I am a very frequent listener to Wrong About Everything. It's a show, I like it, because it's two Republicans and two Democrats that are come together and try to figure out ways that they are more alike than they are different, and talk about issues at that manner, so I would encourage folks to listen to that. I know it was just thrown out there, but no, it really does hit to the heart of what we talk in all our discussions and how important it is to have that dialogue and have those conversations with each other. And then also kind of hits to the point that, Ms. Greenman, you've been talking about, one of the most important things of your job is to make sure that candidates have a chance to talk directly to the electorate and the constituency they hope to serve. And I think that's really, really important. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Greenman, you seem to have a really good understanding of the campaign finance laws, as you've already been serving a little bit on the board. Could you, and the question of public subsidy was brought up, and we've had some discussion in here about that. But, for example, in the case of if candidates in a party operation were found to be illegally coordinating, could you, in your opinion, tell us who should be held accountable, the candidate, the party, both, and what should happen?
Ms. Greenman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fenton, I think that, and I think, as I said, that the board works, I think we'd have to look at the very specific facts of the case and the facts of the way that the legislature wrote the law, and so I haven't been a part of deliberations that have looked at that issue, but I think that that the guidepost would be the law as it's written, and fairly and consistently applying that law as it's written.
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No further questions.
Thank you. Any other member questions or discussion? Are there any other questions at all? Seeing none, I have just one or two more, Ms. Greenman. just overall right now, how do you think Minnesota does when it comes to campaign finance disclosure? I mean, how do you think Minnesota feels that we're doing in this state?
Mr. Chair, I definitely can't speak for and haven't been involved in these issues at the state level, so I definitely can't speak for the public. I think I would say that I think that the fact that the majority of candidates feel comfortable with and are using the campaign finance or the subsidy system and feel like they can run the elections that they want to run is a positive. And I think overall there's in Minnesota people see it as a light, particularly with in comparison to the federal system. So I would that's sort of how I would answer that.
Sure. So, Ms. Greenman, we've been waiting on the website for quite some time. Do you have, I know Ms. Lepik thought maybe June, although she didn't specify which year. Do you have any insights on when that may be unveiled for us as candidates and our treasurers and for the public at large?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that that part of that we will launch in June, as Ms. Lepik said, and that there will be additional pieces rolled out throughout the summer. I think that as I said, I think that the having an intuitive and user-friendly website is incredibly important, and I heard that with visits from many of you as well.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Greenman. Any final questions? Seeing none, do you have any final comments?
No, I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. With that, members, I will renew my motion and move that the appointment of Ms. Emma Greenman be recommended to be confirmed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. With that, we are adjourned.